From the studios of WICR at the University of Indianapolis, I'm Richard Brendan, and this is Journeys Fire. Welcome to the program. You know, I've been with a number of people who were dying and listened to them express regrets over their nearly completed lives. I've heard people say, "I wish I'd spent more time with my children, my family, and those that I love." But I've never heard, or even heard of, a single dying person who said, "I wish I'd spent more time with my business or at the office." Being near death offers a person a level of deep sobriety, I think, and profound sincerity that most of us don't normally approach. The greatest regrets of almost everyone have to do with not having expressed enough love. The message to us, the living, has been clear, at least for me. Love is the single most important aspect of life. Because the measure of our lives and the influence that we have on the world and with one another is determined by the degree of love and openness in our hearts. Well, you know, with my background in healthcare, I've always believed we also need to bring love and compassion into healthcare. We need to, I guess, restore humanity back into healthcare, not only hospitals and doctor's offices, but also nursing homes and assisted livings and hospice companies, which I work for also. It's really important that we do that. And by the way, we're taping this interview on March 11th, and March 11th is being seen as kind of the anniversary of when COVID got serious. It's March 11th last year that the NBA canceled their entire season. We're going to have the President of the United States later tonight talking to the nation because of March 11th. So I have a real keen interest in bringing more compassion and love into healthcare, and not just warehousing our elderlies in the nursing homes and assisted livings, but also, is there a way that we can also emphasize a quality of life? So to talk about that and also talk about one of my favorite subjects, and that's death and dying and what death teaches about living, I invited a dear friend of mine to come onto the program. Her name is Joy Harder, and Joy is an elder care professional with 26 years experience providing holistic support and guidance to elders and their families as they navigate through life's many challenges and transitions. Joy has her master's in counseling from Indiana University, is a licensed health facility administrator, and recently completed her training as an end-of-life doula with the Conscious Dying Institute. She lives and works in Bloomington, Indiana, and she's joining me from Bloomington today. Joy, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Richard. I'm so honored to be here with you.
I know this whole topic is very passionate to you, and it has been for a long time. The first question I have for you is why? Because I don't believe when you were in high school or maybe even in college, did you have health care, for example, on your radar, or weren't you involved in some other totally different subjects?
You're absolutely spot on there. Did I ever think that healthcare or that my path in life would lead me to ultimately wanting to be a lifelong student of death? No, that I would not have ever imagined. And I think I did study psychology, and I knew on some level that I wanted to work with people. But as we can often say in our lives, things just happen, or directions and paths come forward. And the fact that I even got my first professional job after I completed my master's in a nursing facility was just destined to happen, but was not even in the plan.
Really?
I didn't even study gerontology. No!
How did that happen then?
Well, the funny story there is, After I completed my master's and was literally open to any opportunity for what would be my next employment mm-hmm. with that master's, uh-huh. my husband and I used to walk our dog on the property next to Meadowood Retirement Community, which is Griffey Lake here in Bloomington.
Oh, yeah.
And we were driving one day to go walk our dog in the beautiful outdoors there, and my husband says to me, "Why don't you apply at Meadowood?" And I said, "Well, what?" And turns out I took his advice, and it turns out they were looking for a social worker and an admissions coordinator. And the moment I set foot with my resume in Meadowood Retirement Community, I went, oh my goodness, where have I been? And it was just this, you know, inexplicable, I am in the right place. I am supposed to be here. This is where, going forward. So,
I love stories like that. I've had a lot of guests on the program talking about how oftentimes our destiny will find us. I know for me, I'd started off in counseling. Was a pastor also. My theology was growing and broadening, so I didn't really fit a church anymore, thinking about going into coaching practice. And I had a friend who was a nurse out of the clear blue say, call me and say, do you miss like shepherding or pastoring people? I said, well, yeah, I sort of do. And she said, well, would you consider being a hospice chaplain? I said, hospice? Isn't that death and dying? And she said, yes, we're looking for a part-time position. So I said, well, let me talk to the people we interviewed, and they hired me, and within a few months it was full time, and it's been 17 years now. And so it was never on my radar, but I am so passionate now on the whole death and dying movement, the death positive movement. And we'll talk about this pretty soon. Also, the whole death doula thing, which is just growing leaps and bounds. Because death is the most democratic thing on the face of the earth. It will take everybody.
Isn't that the truth?
Yes.
That is, more true words could not be spoken. That's just it.
Well, let me ask you a question, though. I go into a lot of assisted livings and nursing homes still, as I still work as a hospice chaplain for a company here. And what has been your experience over the past couple of decades in terms of quality of care, in terms of challenges that businesses like nursing homes and professionals like you face? Or maybe some advice you might even have for family members who are listening, who have loved ones, or maybe they're considering putting them in a place like a nursing home or assisted living. What has been your take on the quality of healthcare and also restoring humanity back into healthcare, which sometimes I have found it sorely missing?
To ask that question now, while we are still in the midst of this pandemic, is I have found that families have grappled with that decision even more so when in the face of potential distance and inability to visit with their loved ones in a facility. So the answer now is perhaps, well, I'll answer as if we don't have a pandemic, but knowing that the pandemic absolutely influences decision-making for families if they're deciding, well, my loved one could benefit from nursing facility support, and yet if I can't see them, then that factors in as well. So, but healthcare in general, you know, being one of the most regulated professions, industries, as if you will, that it's almost like you constantly having to do more with less, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that those that choose to work in nursing facilities, and I can speak to the amazing staff that I do work with at Meadowood, you have a heart for it. You do it because you care. You do it because you want to make a difference for people. There's no question about that. And you have to balance that with the regulatory and the tasks at hand and the compliance piece, which just makes a challenge for anyone. It just does. And
has that increased over the years, the requirements?
Yeah. In certain realms, yes, it has, and things have certainly changed in terms of reimbursement and Medicare and Medicaid, and we you know, that could be a whole nother show in and of itself or a whole nother conversation, but I ultimately find that it's stressful work, not in the sense of you're caring for people. Yeah. You are caring for people.
Yeah.
And trying to do many tasks at once. So I speak more from the nursing assistant standpoint. I look at how incredible caring in that position, being the most intimate position, mm-hmm. In a nursing facility because of the what you're doing in terms of assistance to a person when they are perhaps half clothed and or in just very intimate moments. To me, I have the greatest respect and admiration for those that do the frontline work. And that's nurses as well, of course. But I'm also speaking to anyone who has that frontline capacity. What a gift they're giving to people. And I find most of those people, you have facilities, unfortunately, that perhaps aren't up to standard. But thankfully, my experience, both at Meadowood and my prior employment at Beltray Senior Living Community, I felt the compassion for the work from people. But is there room for improvement? I would say, oh my gosh, absolutely. There's room for improvement. And in fact, my involvement with the Conscious Dying Institute, in fact, in May of this year, I'm going to be stepping in as an online teaching assistant for the Conscious Dying Institute. I know one of the focus areas that Conscious Dying has is to, as you say, is to how can we elevate and or support the people who are working in the facilities, which in and of itself will enhance the care.
Yeah.
Because the people that work in facilities are humans. And they have struggles, and they have challenges, and they bring them, although they don't share them at work, but they are in as need as much support, especially through a pandemic, mm-hmm. than as those that are in a facility. So,
what was it like for you? How challenging it was for you about a year ago, and when COVID started to really hit hard, and everything was shut down. And you had elderly and even those who were dying pretty much be alone because families weren't allowed to visit them. I mean, I know there was FaceTime and Zoom and things like that, but how did you handle that as a caring professional and as just a caring human being?
Well, certainly it became even more imperative that the communication that I had with families had to be, I put it first and foremost, above everything, to be able to share with them how their loved one is doing, because they didn't have the option of coming in and seeing them themselves. And so whether it be on a platform like Zoom or FaceTime or a telephone, cell phone conversation, not just me, but certainly the team and our activities team really, really worked hard to keep people connected as best we could, given the circumstances. But I will honestly have to say the toll that it has taken on many residents is heartbreaking because the isolation, even if you didn't have COVID, COVID has affected people emotionally and psychosocially, and it's tragic. It's very sad. So even with our best efforts, and I would commend the efforts of the team that I work with, there's still unavoidable impact with that when you can't hold the hand or hug the person you love. There's no substitute for that, just the way it is.
And I think our listeners probably remember those days when you would see it on nightly news, story after story of people who were going through that, and it was heartbreaking. It reminded me of, I don't know, leprosy of back in the biblical times when people were the untouched and you couldn't reach out to them. And we actually had You know, in 2020 and 2021, people who couldn't be touched, and they had to die alone. And thankfully, I'm so grateful I didn't have any family members or close friends have to go through that. But I certainly have witnessed that with the hospice work that I do. And I mean, I just hope we never have to go through that again.
No, so do I. I hope it's, I hope we never have to. Either.
But you know, it does remind me, though, and with COVID, it does remind me that there are no guarantees, that life is fragile, life is precious, life is fleeting, and we all are going to die at some point, that life and death are part of the same coin. I find it fascinating still to this day, though, Joy, that at least here in this country, and maybe even in Western society, we still tend to push death away as if it's the enemy. And in some ways, it's still in the closet. Do you find that to be true?
Oh, absolutely. And I would also describe that as we humans don't like to be uncomfortable, whether that's physically uncomfortable or talking about something uncomfortable. We don't like to do it. You know, we put it aside. Yeah. And as a culture, we're that way. We're not forthcoming with especially with death. It's almost as if it's taboo to talk about it. Or better yet, if you're going to talk about it, you're going to bring it on sooner than it would happen anyway. You know, I just think there's a lot of mistruths about death. And as you've already said, there's so much to learn from death about living. It's just incredible how much we can learn. And, you know, I'm remembering reading something from Deepak Chopra about, you know, one of the greatest disservices we humans do to ourselves and one of the greatest stresses we put on ourselves mm-hmm. is fear of death.
Yes.
It's a stress. It's a physical stress on our bodies. And he goes on to say, having an awareness of death is as important as a good night's sleep, as your nutrition, as all the things we do to de-stress ourselves, that if we would just enhance our awareness and our acceptance and our understanding of death and fold it into our lives, we would be healthier people. And so that really sticks with me. They're like, oh my gosh, it's so true, right? It's so true that there's so much to be learned about living fully through a greater understanding or even just, thinking more about one's death and our mortality because, like you say, we all are going to die.
Yes.
Death comes. And we can either be a little bit more prepared for that than we might otherwise, knowing that full well, full preparation, you know, okay, come on, we can't know what death is because, well, we don't really know. But ultimately, openness and embracing what death and our mortality can teach us and what we hold most dear in our lives is the doors that can open to a full life are immeasurable. I really think it's immeasurable, yeah.
What were your earlier experiences, your earliest experience of death? Was it as a child or as an adult? When were you with somebody for the first time that actually died?
Well, I must have been in my, that's a good question, my early 20s, my uncle, well, both I remember my aunt, my dad's sister having cancer and having that diagnosis and living with that diagnosis for several years. And in the course of her having cancer, my uncle, her husband, had liver cancer and died and just quickly died. And I think that was the closest that I felt to, because I remember visiting him in the hospital and seeing his yellowed skin and just being moved in a way that I hadn't yet and been that close to death. at that time. My grandparents, of course, you know, some experience with their passing and their funerals, but somehow the whole experience with my uncle was sort of imprinted a bit heavier on me. And so fast forward to say, goodness, I don't know, other points of death and in my life, having started at Meadowood in, let's see, that would be my first time at Meadowood at about 26 years ago. Mm-hmm. I do recall the first times that I was in a room, a residence room, and they had passed. And not being able, as I look back, to explain my, what's the word? See, I'm out of lack of words. It's just this phenomenon, just this experience of being in a room with someone who had passed. I guess fascinated comes to mind, but it's more that word doesn't even do it justice. Some otherworldly thing going on. And so I look back at my life and I say, wow, I really have always been destined to get into the death profession in some capacity. I have had several dreams about my own death through the course of my life, always with this ultimate clarity that comes from my death, and always this intertwining of life and death in my dreams. And the other thing that this comes to mind, my mom, who passed away September 11th of 2019, and I will say my family, my sister Hillary and my dad, we were able to be bedside with her, and that was unlike any experience I had ever had with my own mother passing. Mm-hmm. But she had shared with me, she was chronically ill leading up to her death, and I knew this intellectually, but I hadn't really fully absorbed this. My mom had her first child was my parents' first child was a stillborn. It would have been my sister the year before I was born, and my mom shared this with me from her hospital bed. And she shared the date of her birth, but also her death. And there was also another second pregnancy that my mom had an ectopic pregnancy. And so when I was finally born, I was joy. I was joy to them. And when my mom told me that, I felt like everything was just rushing to this moment of, joy, you embrace your joy. Your path is before you. Trust it. You know it. You felt it. You haven't trusted it as much as you will going forward. And it has just led me to where I am now. And
was that the first time that your mom shared all of that with you?
To that extent, yes.
To that extent.
So we of course had known that my that my parents had had a stillborn baby, but she gave life. My mom, in talking to me bedside, gave life to that person, gave life to my sister, my unnamed sister. And it became a soul to me. And it's someone who I just now feel like I will forever have a connection with, my sister, who I didn't ever have the opportunity to meet in body.
Yeah.
You know, but and so much of the work of a death doula is your soul's work. It is, and it's being present, whether it's bedside or whether with a family, and exposing and being authentically yourself with all of your own vulnerabilities and fears, and just allowing and creating that space for other people and families to delve into that and to experience the sacredness of that, because it's unbelievably sacred.
Yeah. One of the things I find interesting about your mom and when she chose to share that with you, and that's, we could put that under what the dying teaches about living, because she was very aware of her mortality. We say we are, but we're not, especially if we're healthy and we're younger and we're chugging along and doing life and working and things like that. But when we're in a hospital bed or at a nursing home or what have you, and we know we're declining and people are visiting us more because, you know, something's wrong, they're visiting us more. And I just find that somehow, oftentimes, not always, but more times than not, the heart gets tenderized. And I remember hearing somebody, and I can't remember who, share the insight that death evokes wholeness. It almost gives people permission toward wholeness, to say the things they've never said before, to become things they've never been before. And it kind of, that's kind of like what your mom did for you.
Yes, I would say that is very accurate. I will counterpoint with what you just said with another memory that comes with when my mom was in the hospital, and the times that we were laughing hysterically about things that she was bringing up that were funny to her. And so, you know, here we have these poignant moments about, oh, times that were just wrenching, right, emotionally and otherwise, then balanced with laughing. She was telling me stories about my dad and this time when they were, I don't know, I won't even go into it, but it was, I was laughing and I was crying at the same time.
Yes.
And so I think there's this laughing, crying, this wholeness. It's our whole connectivity right there. It's opening your heart. Like you say, the heart opens, whether it be through tears.
Yes.
Or whether it be through laughter or something that just gets your spirit and your soul opened up.
Mm.
And either way gets you there. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember for me, I think I had this fascination of death when I was a little boy, and we lived close to some woods, and I would find a bird who had died. And I would put and only a couple times I've done this, but I would put the bird in a shoebox and I would dig a hole in the backyard and I'd bury it, just because I had this sense that maybe I should do that. But I think I was curious, and maybe after about 3 or 4 weeks, I'd dig it up to see what I found. I remember a snapshot of that. And then I remember when I did my undergrad work at Purdue in West Lafayette, and a part-time job I had for a while was with Wright Flowers. Don't even know if they still exist, but I was the delivery guy. Well, when they got harried and busy, they would teach me a little bit and then allow me to do the funeral arrangements. I guess I jokingly said, because nobody's going to complain, you know? So when I'm doing the arrangements, or when I would haul some flowers to a funeral, and this was in Lafayette then, I remember one funeral home, Hip and Steel, I think the name of it was. That was one of my first times really going in when no one else was there, because I was just the delivery guy. And there was the casket, and the body was in the casket, so a funeral was going to start in an hour or two or what have you. I just remember how quiet the room was. And I remember, you know, dropping the flowers there and then just standing there and looking at the body and just really soaking it all in. So I guess when I look back on my life, I always did have this fascination with the mystery of it all. Not having really grown up in a Christian home or anything, like afterlife or whatever, I just always had that sense. And so just like you, I'm always looking for the lessons that people are teaching me, the people that I serve. And I try and encourage other people to do that too, who are doing this kind of work, because they're there. And that's going to be us one day. Now, you mentioned about you've had several dreams about your death. What did you learn about that, or did that freak you out when that happened?
Oh, gosh, no, it didn't freak me out at all. In fact, I've been an avid journal writer my whole life.
Okay.
My whole life. And I woke up from that dream and I journaled about it and I wrote about it. So I can I've returned numerous times to reread the experience of my death dream. And I always return to this lesson, good word, of my dream, which was this intertwining of life and death. They felt like the same. They were the same in my dream. And so I've carried that. That's in me. And my dream, my death dream, involved water and being submerged in water.
Mm-hmm.
But the clarity and the calm and the soothing nature of the water as I took my last breath and let go in the water was just, I can't really put it into words, but it was just, it changed my life. It just changed my perspective. Words are just, sometimes words just don't do justice to our experience. But my dream was just the vast beauty of life, which is also the vast beauty of death. So
that's interesting. I think it was Marianne Williams that said she felt like we didn't necessarily have so much a fear of death. We have a fear of living. And I have found, and I'm bringing this up because you had this beautiful experience of your dream, and knowing you, I know you're the kind of person that lives fully. You do. And I find that people who do that often are more graceful in their dying. It's like they just don't have any regrets because they have lived a full life.
Yes. Going back to the dream just for a minute, I recall also a thread of, having at the same time where the vast beauty of life was there, there were the pangs of letting go, of leaving people that you love, and just this immersion into something unknown. And there's fear there. And there was some fear in the dream, but it dissipated. It dissipated in the dream. And I think that motivates me even more to encourage people to talk, to have the conversations about death. And, this might be a nice segue to talking about death doula, but one of the responsibilities I feel as a death doula in my heart is promoting the conversations, having the conversations, encouraging the conversations about death, about loss, about the grief that you feel when you lose someone, just the life's experiences, which, as we say, life and death, both sides of the coin.
Yeah.
And I am committed. I am, it is my sacred duty, it is my spiritual responsibility as a doula to do what I can in this life to promote death awareness and death acceptance. Mm-hmm. It's part of what I do as a doula.
Yeah.
It's one of the things I really love about being a doula, because I want to get on the rooftops and say, death is okay.
A death doula for some listeners might be something new. It's been growing over the years. I think we've had birth doulas for years. I have a couple of friends who are professional birth doulas. But much like a birth doula helping to assist bring life into this world, a death doula really does the same thing. You're helping a transition from this life to the next, whatever your religious belief is in terms of that next life. What was it about that? Was it just the years of experience you had in healthcare and in your experience with your mom and other things that you decided to take that deeper dive and go through the extensive training, which it is, and you're now done with that? And as you said earlier, you're going to be helping to facilitate training online, which I'm so excited about because you'll be amazing at that. But share a little bit about the training it took to be a death doula and what does actually a death doula do?
Well, I'm gonna say one thing about how you said, how did I actually decide to take this deep dive? And really my whole life, I've been a very I'm an introvert. I'm very introspective. I get into the depths. I'm more comfortable there than I am than with superficialities. And I'm also always been a very shy person. And I don't think I fully embraced my spirituality that I knew was there all along. I can look at my journals when I was 10 or 11 years old, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, like, wow, I kind of already had a sense then of things. Mm-hmm. So for me, it became when I learned of the Conscious Dying Institute through a friend of mine who's also a death doula here in Bloomington. What spoke to me the most strongly was the spiritual component of the training. That it would, because in order to help others heal, you have to heal yourself. You have to be on that journey of healing for yourself. And this was enabled me to embrace that, my own healing, my ongoing healing, like we all are at all times. And so the Conscious Dying Institute training, which was very intense, I was grateful that the first phase of our training, which I was able to do in person in February of 2020, mm-hmm. right before COVID blew everything up, I was able to do that in person. And the intensity of the emotions that those of us being trained, it was amazing and unbelievable, because I have recollections of being in a room with the other doulas being trained, and we were, you know, there was some yelling and screaming, and, you know, dealing with intense emotions is one of the things that doulas have to do. When someone is dying, there is a lot of intensity about that, and people don't necessarily know what to do with that.
Yes.
And so you have to be comfortable with those emotions within yourself to be able to be comfortable with those that are experiencing it. Because as a doula, you are the calm in the room. You are the stabilizing force and the resource and the support and the guide for families and the individual who is dying, mm-hmm. to be that calming presence. So the other part to the training that I undertook with the Conscious Dying Institute is the fact that it does encompass not only the spiritual domain, but the physical domain and the literal cradling and positioning that a doula can do for someone at the end of life, the intellectual domain of doing life review, of talking about how do you want to be remembered, and life legacy and telling stories like my mom did with me, right? That was just that is so poignant and so memorable. That'll stick with me forever.
Yes.
And what a beautiful memory. And then, of course, the emotional component, which, yes, can get pretty intense. And if you're factoring in family dynamics or estranged siblings or families that weren't close to begin with, it can be very challenging to try to come to some resolve at the end of life and resolve conflicts or burdens or who knows what at that point. And then lastly, the practical part of being a doula, helping people prepare for death. That could be everything from having an advance directive, having your living will specified, what your final wishes are, what type of funeral, how do you want to be remembered, what type of music do you want if you're going to have a funeral, do you want to be cremated, do you want to be buried, do you know the options? And so there's a lot.
Yeah.
So those, all of that is constitutes a very intense training.
Well, absolutely, and it still amazes me that the majority of people, they just don't want to think about these things. They want to put it off. I had an experience today walking down the hall of a facility, and one of the nurses who knew me, because I had visited many patients there, and we just had a patient who died there about a week ago. She joked and said, "Oh, you're the last person I want to see. Is something wrong with me? Like, Doctor of Death is now entering in." And that's kind of what we've done with all of this. But the beautiful thing about end-of-life doulas, is just what you shared. You're holding space for people, you're providing, but you're providing that guidance as well. You mentioned something, yes, I think very important that people probably don't even think about, so they don't do it, and that's life review. Share why that is so important in preparing for things, because my own father is on hospice now, and he'll be turning 90. And I find myself, I didn't say, oh, I must do a life review and check it off my list. I just found myself going in the basement, and I'm kind of the keeper of all the photos of my kids when they were younger and my parents when they were younger. And I just found myself, because I found it comforting, to go through all of those and sit with each photo, remembering the story behind that photo is kind of a life review. Why is that important, and people should be more open in doing those kind of things?
Well, it's a practice in meaning and identifying for a person. Perhaps reviewing is a way to see that your life had purpose.
Yes.
And did have meaning, and that your life wasn't for naught, and you made amazing things, things that are, no matter the degree of what your life was, it is significant. It is truly significant. You are significant. And to pass with the knowledge that you contributed in some way, large or small, because we as humans, it's just recognition. Recognition is huge.
Yeah.
And it helps the heart. It helps with letting go too, because you can recognize I have value and to the things that you had in your life. Mm-hmm. So life review is truly important, and whether you do that by way of story, by way of photos, by way of There's limitless with in terms of creativity of doing a life review or perhaps even putting a life review into some tangible form, so that then you can share that with your family, and it's something that lives on beyond you.
Yes,
and that's really important.
Did you also talk about ritual and the importance of rituals?
Oh my goodness, yes, and. How unfortunate in this time of COVID, where the rituals that many of us are perhaps accustomed to, and or the funeral and the gatherings and the families coming together has obviously been thwarted with COVID. Mm-hmm. But the whole act of ritual is, again, returns to the heart and soul of a person's existence, and it memorializes and it comforts, and ritual can take any number of facets. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, from the standpoint of, I know in the training that we often spoke of what would a ritual be for us? How would we envision our own passing or our celebration of life after our death, and rituals, many rituals like sitting around a fire and or there are numerous ways that you can embody someone's spirit, mm-hmm. and something ritual that's based on the person. And so And I think as a doula, one of the things that you do when you establish a relationship and a trust with a family and the individual is you learn about them,
yeah.
and you help them identify, you love knitting, and maybe you would want knitting something that you knit around, the person leads the way.
Mm-hmm.
They will guide you to what a potential ritual for that person would be, and the sky's the limit, because each person is unique, and you are being guided by the unique needs of that person.
Yes,
and the unique interests, and so the ritual simply comes out of that, and is connecting and unifying with the universe and other individuals and ancestors. I know a great deal people who do a lot of rituals to connect with their ancestors and to honor their ancestors. And there's really a lot of potency there that you just can't even imagine doing a ritual, how it can really change your life. It really can.
So rituals are really important in regards with the healing aspect, with people dealing with grief as well.
Oh, for sure. That's you're right. And that the fact that it does contribute to an overall, you know, your journey of healing and having some degree of closure and completion, but really it's that sense of wholeness. You used that word before. Mm-hmm. It helps bring the parts together in a more cohesive way within. Yeah. Mm. That's real. You're absolutely right. That ritual, if I had to put a word that is the most important, it helps with healing. It absolutely helps with healing.
Now, when you were going through the Death Doula training with the Conscious Dying Institute, and from what I know, and Taron Estes, who's the founder of that, it's probably the top place. If you're thinking about doing Death Doula work, I mean, because I'm on the mailing list, and I love the quality of work that's going out there, so I know the kind of training that you've had and that you'll be also helping to teach with others who sign up. How much was shared in terms of helping you embrace your own mortality for your impending death one day?
Well, during our training, we literally went through a practice where we embodied being dead. And we had a doula by our side, so we took turns with being a doula and then having a doula and going through, that's where the having a practice for death. In fact, I will say one of the things that I continue to do to this day after the training that I had is it's a poem or just a practice for death that I say every morning, because I have learned that I want death in front of me, so I value my life. And the way to do that is to be reminded in some way and revere the final journey home, because we're all going that way.
Yes.
And so I consciously repeat my practice for death. And so that was introduced to us in the training and hasn't left me, and it never will, because it is enabled me to embrace even more my mortality. And heaven forbid I say that I'm actually looking forward to dying. That would be kind of not necessarily the right thing to say, but I am not afraid of it.
Right.
And I'm the mystery of it all is undeniable, and it is so I want to be able to share that with
I would love for you to share that with the listeners.
All right, so this is written by Taron, and in fact she tells the story of how this came to her in a dream, and it's entitled Practice for Death. I return to God. I release my body to the earth. I retrieve my energy from all worldly things. I relax into the source of my being. Death is my teacher. I have prepared for this moment all of my life. All teachings converge for this departure. The truth of impermanence envelops me. I am free from suffering. I release my spirit to the light. I am forgiven. My work is done. I return to the light.
That's beautiful.
Pretty cool. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, and I can see how by sharing that every day to yourself and probably sometimes even slowly, or that what you're doing is you're kind of rewiring your brain to embrace that mortality, to start preparing for your own death, because in many cultures, especially in Eastern cultures, people do that. And much like we probably did back in the agricultural days in America when we lived on farms and grandma or grandpa died and we'd have the funeral right there in the house. And, you know, we've compartmentalized it over the years and it's become sterile.
It truly has, and we just need to take the take the blinders off and put it out in the light and just bring that openness to the whole experience, because it's between, like as you say, 100 years ago, over 100 years ago, things were much different, and we've just it's become medicalized and hidden, and as if it's a failure to die.
Yes.
It's not that. It doesn't have to be that at all. Mm-hmm. And so we've done ourselves a disservice by really being so focused on youth-based, we feel good, let's cure it, let's fix it, let's treat it. Mm-hmm. And wherein there lies a person's choice to define how they want to die.
Yes.
And you have to talk about that. You can't just assume people know. You have to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the more we talk about it, the more we get it out of the closet and just air it, give it some air and talk about any fears that we might have about that, about where do we go after we die. There's so many. We haven't even touched on grief. That's a whole nother topic, really. And actually, ritual and so many of the things you've already shared that an end-of-life doula does helps with the grief process and precipitatory grief that people have.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And the grief that people have experienced in this past year through the loss, I've experienced the grief of the loss of people I don't even know, because what comes right down to it, I know how intricately interconnected we all are. So I feel the loss. I feel the loss that it impacts our planet, and so it's intense. And knowing that, recognizing that and confronting and or embracing, it's sort of like I imagine somebody holding their grief in their arms and cradling it. It's like, it's okay. Befriend your grief and know that your grief can take you even deeper than you ever imagined, because it can if you allow it.
Yes.
But you have to nurture it. You have to hold it. You have to be able to sit with it.
Mm.
And let it be ugly and nasty and scary and all the things that that grief can be. Mm-hmm. Grief is messy. Grief is really messy. And you just have to let it be messy.
Yes.
You have to let it be messy.
Yes, exactly. No? Exactly. For some reason, I'm thinking about a book that John O'Donohue wrote, Beauty, the Invisible Embrace. In that book, he has a chapter called The Beauty of Death. And I remember one small section, because you and I both have witnessed this in nursing homes. When a person dies in their bed, he says, and I don't have the book with me, paraphrasing, he says, when a person dies in their bed, that bed is not just a deathbed. That bed is transformed into a sacred altar where a spiritual transformation has taken place. And I know me and several others over the years have had a real passion that when someone dies, especially in a nursing home or assisted living, that just by modeling to just be quiet, turn a TV off, don't have someone so quickly take care of the body, and just help people just even a small way, especially young people who are AIDS maybe, just getting started in the healthcare field, that something wonderful has taken place here. So let's just sit with that for a minute, too. And I know that's what an end-of-life doula does as well. I mean, you can offer so many resources on so many levels in an area that is often born with fear. And, and people just don't really know where to go. So I guess I want to say that to lead into this. How can people contact you, Joy, if they have some questions about various things?
Oh, Well, I'm happy to share my email address. So please, anyone who's listening to this and wants to just have a conversation or know more about any aspect of what we, Richard, you and I have just talked about. So my email address is joytracy, T-R-A-C-Y. That's my middle name. Joytracy9, the number 9, at gmail.com. And I would welcome anyone who wants to reach out.
Well, you have a lot of experience to share, not only in the background in general healthcare, but also now as a trained end-of-life death doula. And it doesn't surprise me that Tyrone has recognized those skills you uniquely have to help her train others down the road. And so once again, people have any questions at all about the dying process, about green funerals, about the legal aspects of things, contact Joy at joytracy9@gmail.com. And Joy, perhaps sometime maybe you and I can do a Zoom thing and market it to people, and people can learn more through a little Zoom workshop as I'm trying to get hip to technology courtesy of COVID these days.
Yes. I would love that.
Well, Joy Harder, thank you so much for sharing your time with us today, your expertise, your knowledge, your heart. And I'm so excited that you're taking a deep dive into this work, this end-of-life doula work, which is so needed. And I just really appreciate the light and the love that you share in your community as well. Blessings to you.
And blessings to you, dearest Richard. Thank you so very much.
It's a great having Joy on the program, and I know I'm going to have her back as well. You know, in the light of death, there is wisdom in living well. Being with people who are dying can offer us a sort of healing. Dying people give us darshan. In the Hindu spiritual tradition, the guru sits before his students and begins to throw out candies and pieces of dried fruits, little bits of sweetness which represent the sweetness of his teaching and his wisdom. And his students catch these things and eat them, and then they're woven into the very fabric of who those students are. You see, the wisdom and sweetness is woven in because it's eaten. Well, death is like that. Dying people have our attention because they're dying. Often dying people will say something to us or experience things in our presence that we will weave into the very fabric of our lives from then on, and our lives will be better for that. Death is a time when we know the value of love, that our love matters, that it makes a difference. And I've also found that one moment of unconditional love can call into question the shame of a lifetime and invalidate it. So here's what I've learned. Dying well and living well is not a question of expertise and mastery. It's much more a question of trust and mystery, intimacy and love, a willingness to show up as the vulnerable human beings that we are. And that is today's program. Thank you so much for joining us. I really want to give a special shout out to my amazing engineer, Genesis Brown, and my production coordinator, Angel Richardson. They help make this possible. I'm Richard Brendan. You've been listening to Journey's Fire. We're bringing love to life, one broadcast at a time.